Welcome to the Sporting Ones podcast series, episode 8 now. How you going, Haydos?
Very well, Rowie. How are you?
All right, good. We're here to discuss the AFL and the break between the minor round season and the finals. So, no real shocks last weekend, were there?
No, not really. I think it was a good one for tipsters. Most people got around the 8 and 9 from my competition. I think, yeah, there were some pretty happy tipsters out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it started off Friday night, and once Port had that first quarter, well, it was really all done and dusted from there. They had no chance of making the finals after that. Finished off the season really poorly, and as has been questioned, there'll surely be a huge review into that. I'm definitely pushing for it. Not very happy at all with the way they finished the season. And then it turned to Richmond and the Bulldogs, which was quite a bit of a surprise game. Good for the fantasy punters like myself, especially with the likes of McRae and Bontempelli going big. And Richmond again escaping with a win at the MCG. They're just so blessed at that venue.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable. It's over the 20 mark now, which, yeah, is no mean feat. And they're going to be playing probably three more games to end the season there, I'd say.
Yeah, more than likely. And then Geelong had the enviable, well, not the enviable task, the easy task in the end of playing Gold Coast Suns to secure their spot. And they did that very easily by 102 points. And then Sydney Hawthorn and... well, no, it was Freo Collingwood, and Freo almost caused an upset.
Yeah, they were good for three quarters and probably unlucky to not get the win in the end. They pushed Collingwood all the way to the wire, which is good to see. Give them a good touch-up before they play West Coast next week.
Yeah, probably what Collingwood needed before going into the finals, and gives them a good handle and a venue. That was the first time they'd been there. Well, not just Optus Stadium, but the first time they'd been to Perth in two seasons.
Is that right? Well, yeah, we know how much they love playing in Victoria and how much AFL looks after them.
Yeah, they're one of they're the only side that hasn't, well, up until that point, hadn't played in Perth for two seasons. So now they get to play there twice in 2 weeks. A bit of a luck of the draw. Then Sydney Hawthorn, where Sydney, for mine, did very, very well without Franklin and Parker to be in the match with still 5 minutes to go.
Yeah, definitely. When the news filtered through that both Franklin and Parker were out, some expected Franklin to miss, rather. But yeah, they pushed him all the way to the end, and it was a very close game. I think Sydney will take a lot out of that going into the finals.
Yeah, definitely they'll take a lot out of that going against a perhaps beaten-up GWS. Adelaide took care of Carlton to finish off their season quite strongly in their final 5 to 6 weeks, belting them to the tune of 100 odd points. And then it shifted to the Sunday matches, and I expected Brisbane to push West Coast more, but West Coast were very professional in the way they dismantled Brisbane.
Yeah, they were in control for the whole game. There was a little bit of a momentum shift at the end of the game in the last quarter there, probably a little bit of West Coast taking the foot off the pedal just slightly, but still steered the boys to victory. So, yeah, they're well-deserved of the second spot, definitely.
Yeah, they weren't really, for mine, in any danger of losing that one. I'd say, yeah, they just took the foot off the pedal, I'd say, a little bit. Then it shifted to probably the second match of the round behind Sydney and Hawthorn, and that was GWS and Melbourne. And for mine, GWS were very disappointing. Melbourne had it all to play for, and they took their opportunity.
Yeah, that was billed as what would be a pretty exciting contest for two players that could have potentially faced off again the week after if GWS were to win. But for me, GWS, they were the most disappointing of all the teams for the round. I expected them to go a lot better, and it was really a no contest. They were lucky to be as close as they were at half time, and then after half time, Melbourne just took full advantage of all their opportunities, and the game was over by midway through the third quarter.
Which is more surprising given the fact that for once Melbourne was a side that was down to only two rotations by half time, and GWS actually for once had their full complement.
Yeah, and Melbourne were very impressive. That's two wins in a row against quality top eight sides. I expect GWS will be bolstered by a few ins, but they've got a lot to turn around in a short space of time.
Yeah, it just raises questions over their ability to win at the MCG. It is a venue they do not like to visit, much like a few other sides. They prefer the enclosed roof of Etihad to the wide open spaces of the MCG. So that's going to be an interesting subplot for them. In terms of the last game, it really was a nothing contest, just bruise free footy between St Kilda and North Melbourne.
Yeah, it was a bit of a nothing to see here contest, as we like to call them, but the only thing to come out of it was probably the Ben Brown to see if he could kick the 7 or 8 goals that he needed to snatch the common, but it wasn't to be. And yeah, Kangaroos got the victory, which they'd be happy with. They one of the best sides out of the 8, I'm sure.
And then it turned into the subplot of how many points could Seb Ross score in fantasy, because that ended up being the talking point after the game, not the actual match. And that in the end, Seb Ross's 122 caused the draw between the top two sides in fantasy.
Yeah, it never happened before, and I almost expect that it probably will never happen again. But yeah, that was a sort of a different story to a nothing sort of contest. And yeah, there was a lot of prize money and just prizes in general riding on that last few minutes. And
well, it was the Toyota Kuba, and in the end there was only apparently one of them, but we've had word filter through that the AFL has relented, and given the fact they both signed up on the same day within hours of each other, the ruling is that if you, whoever signs up first wins the competition. But given the outrage and the who knows, the petitions, that they have both become joint winners.
Yeah, and a second time for Selby, who is just a bit of a fantasy guru by all accounts. He's won it twice in a row, probably. Yeah, that will never happen again also. And yeah, well done to the man.
Listening to his interview, he happens to agree. He doesn't know if it'll happen again. He did put out a spreadsheet. Just shows the quality of the bloke. He put out a spreadsheet of his of how he devises his sides at the start of the season, and that raised $6,500 for cancer. So he's very good in that respect as well. So if he's got his spreadsheet up and running again next season, I'll be happy to donate to it, I think.
Absolutely, and he could be the first person ever to
live off
fantasy prizes. He's got two in a row.
Two cars in a row. It's his garage must be getting full. Unfortunately for myself, I fell short by 20 points. I had two late outs in Franklin and Sloan, and that ended up costing me because I had no backup in the forward line, and I lost by only 20 points. So I lost my league, but well done to the winner. He was better all season, and the overall rankings prove that. So we'll move on, and we'll have a quick glance over these finals contests. They're quite juicy for mine.
Yeah, probably there's, anyone could win every match. Probably Richmond and Hawthorn is probably going to be the only one where Richmond would be a really heavy favourite. Hawthorn certainly not without their chance. Alistair Clarkson is the master coach, and yeah, I expect it's going to be a pretty good final series. Anyone can win it for mine.
Yeah, no, exactly right. And over the last two seasons, that's been shown, because although Richmond finished in the top four, they were by no means a favourite for it last season. That was definitely lying with Adelaide. And the season before, obviously, the Bulldogs coming from seventh position. Also, were, I guess, probably second to last favourites to win it. So they had a tremendous run. So I guess we'll look at in depth next week at those finals. But just to quickly brush over them, on the Thursday, so next Thursday night, you've got Richmond and Hawthorn at the MCG, which for mine will probably be the match of the round. I give Hawthorn a very strong chance in this. Then the Friday night, we've got Melbourne and Geelong. And then we move to
Sydney and GWS, and that one's going to be interesting just for the fact to see how many players GWS are going to bring back, because there's a whole stack of them that want to come in, and it's a lot of quality. The only question is, how many do you bring in at once? I think if you look back to Western Bulldogs in that 2015 when they won it from seventh, they had probably about six or seven major inclusions, and that was all the momentum that they needed going forward. And if GWS can take a leaf out of their book, who knows? But yeah, and then West Coast versus Collingwood, that's probably going to be another one with a slight heavy favourite, West Coast at home. Hopefully they do enough to get the victory and the week off after.
Yeah, I think in those ones, I'm going for an upset on the Thursday night. Friday could go either way, not sort of swayed at this point. I think Saturday twilight's the same. It could go either way. And Saturday night, I think West Coast would have to get the job done over there. Wasn't convinced with Collingwood at all. Playing a side like Fremantle, they should have really dismantled them by about 4 to 5 goals. And the fact that it was so close just means their mind might not have been on the job, but also their personnel they're missing might be starting to tell a toll. So we'll see what happens with that one, but looking at West Coast. So I guess we'll head to... there's been a few interesting trade rumours, some delistings and some retirements and coaching movements. We'll just touch briefly on them. I guess the main two we're hearing about, especially here in this state, is Jared Polak and Mitch McGovern.
Yeah, Polak's obviously got that huge offer in front of him, which Porter pretty much conceding that he'll take that, and they won't hold any grudges on him because it's going to be a fair lump of money for the 26-year-old winger.
And look, I mean, in terms of Polak, if you're looking at it, North Melbourne's got a similar list, same sort of structure as Port. You're earning probably $300,000 to $400,000 more a season than what you could at Port. Same sort of opportunity for finals. Yeah, look, I can't blame Polak for taking that. Unfortunately, Port don't have anyone really that I can see, other than maybe Motlop, but his skills aren't anywhere near Polak's, to be able to replicate his metres gained and his kicking efficiency. Mitch McGovern, on the other hand, obviously some things have happened at the club that we know about that perhaps hasn't sat well with him. He's decided that the 3-year contract, he's no longer looking to stay there. And there's sort of two clubs that I feel that are in the running for him, one being Carlton and the other being Fremantle.
Yeah, that's a pretty disappointing one for the Crows, frankly. They signed him only a year ago, and then obviously, there's been some average stuff that's been reported, and some obviously has affected players more than others. McGovern must be one of them, we can only assume. And yeah, looks like he's probably going to be headed to Victoria, but don't count out West Coast just yet. He might want to go play with his brother.
Well, I don't know whether he got the salary cap. I mean, he can be in the same town as his brother because Fremantle will probably have the salary cap room to be able to go for him and do have more of a need for that tall forward in their forward line, and especially more of a mobile one like McGovern. In terms of Carlton, the real link there with Carlton is not just the fact that Carlton need a player of his ilk, but also the fact that the forwards coach from Adelaide, David Teague, is at the Blues and apparently had a very good relationship with David Teague. So that could be another piece of the puzzle as to why he's looking at Carlton.
Yeah, I guess there's so many factors involved with these AFL players. They are people after all, and more than just football and money and all that comes into account. And yeah, he just has to think about what's best for him and where he can see himself, and obviously contributing to a team that's going to be fighting for finals and premierships in years to come.
And obviously earning more cash as well.
Yes.
Quickly, I guess there's been just a few others that have come to mind. Gaff still looks like he's undecided. I reckon that's about 50-50 for mine.
Yeah, it's not looking great, to be honest. And I know that he's spending a lot of time in Victoria. He's had some not so good family news is with his old man, so that, you know, that could be a factor. Again, it would be really disappointing to lose Gaffey. All the West Coast fans love him, and yeah, but who knows with that one.
Yeah, Tom Lynch looks like he, the Gold Coast variety, looks like he's nailed on for Richmond by all accounts, which would severely bolster their forward line. They could literally have Jack Riewoldt playing out of centre-half forward and delivering the ball into Tom Lynch, which would be pretty much putting it on a plate for Tom Lynch.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting because they obviously have built a really strong team without landing that big fish. I think Alex Rance made mention of that maybe a season or two ago. So it'd be interesting to see how that sort of affects their salary cap and the players that they have at that club. And what it does to their game plan too, because obviously Riewoldt's the only tool forward really. So if they change things up, I mean, I wouldn't want to change a winning formula, but obviously Lynch is a quality player and he's only going to add to their goal scoring ability, so it makes sense for them to want to grab him still.
Yeah, exactly. Lockie Nils, Brisbane are reportedly chasing him extremely hard, offering up their number one draft pick, and apparently they tried for him 2 years ago.
Yeah, that was caught me by surprise. I only heard that today myself. I'd be pretty surprised to see him go, to be honest, especially he's an Adelaide, well, South Australia boy, down Narra Court way, I believe, so... Yeah,
I believe he's a Port supporter, but clearly we're not in the hunt for him, and it's Brisbane that's looking the most likely if he decides to take up that opportunity, bearing in mind he does come out of contract at the end of next season, so that's something to weigh up as well. The other one that's being talked about heavily is Dane Beams, being linked back to Collingwood. Brisbane have come out and stringently denied that he is going anywhere, but that he probably will leave when his contract's up at the end of 2020.
Yeah, okay. I think he also came out and said the same thing. So when a player comes out and says it, you can usually say that that's probably what's going to happen.
The other three in that have been, I guess, in huge, that have come out as sort of ones to watch, Hanbury to the Saints. I guess the issue I've got with Hanbury is he's a 27-year-old that's playing like a 32, 33-year-old. He looks really, really banged up. Does a club want to take the opportunity and give him a 3-year, 4-year contract? That's my issue.
Yeah, well, Hanbury is that All-Australian pedigree behind him, and it could be just a case of just having that really short pre-season. He's had that injury, stick around. He's trying to play through it. It's not exactly going to plan. Give him some time off, give his body the rest and recovery it needs, and he could be a whole new player next year. So that would be a boost for any club that's after him.
The other two that have surfaced this week is GWS young guns Dylan Scheel being heavily linked back to Victoria. Initially, it was with Carlton and Essendon, but as like with all half-decent players and more of the top echelon of players, heavily linked with a move to Hawthorn, which would bolster their midfield no end. The other one, which is also being heavily linked with Hawthorn, is Chad Wingard.
Well, yeah, there you go. I haven't heard any of those two rumours, but yeah, it amazes me how a team like Hawthorn can still attract all those stars and keep them in their salary cap confines. But yeah, they are a destination club. There's no two ways about it. They're constantly at the top end for the year and finals. So yeah, if teams players want to go to a team that's always going to have success, then they're probably one of the better ones to go to.
To me, it just shows how good their coaching setup and their development of players is set up for Hawthorn. Okay, moving on to a few coaching announcements. So Brett Ratten's been confirmed as going to St Kilda as a not a backup for Alan Richardson, but more of a helping hand for Alan Richardson, and coming from a club that has severe pedigree, as we just spoke about in Hawthorn.
Yeah, well, frankly, at the moment, Saints need all the help they can get, so it's no surprise that they're after pinching someone from Hawthorn stocks. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and hopefully he can turn it around for Saints and Saints supporters.
Once again, another... another person leaving from the Crows in Josh Franco. After only one season, he has left the club. It's not been confirmed whether he's leaving for outside interest, which is his teaching, or whether he's going up to the sunny confines of Gold Coast to help his mate Stewie Dewey out.
Yeah, it's always interesting to know how much of an effect these extra coaches have on teams for me, and you know, it's almost impossible to measure, I guess, from the outside, but everything that we know about Franco is that he's a quality person and has had success coaching, So, yeah, also a close relationship with Stuart Jew is going to help, and maybe that's another thing in the works for them.
Yeah, a few movements of Port Adelaide. Brendan Lade has also decided to go back to Melbourne for many different reasons, and he's joining up with the Saints. And then Aaron Greaves has also left, and Matty Nix is joining GWS. And then probably the biggest announcement I've seen today in terms of coaching is your coach.
Yeah, signed a 3-year contract extension. That's Adam Simpson, who's had a terrific year, turned the Eagles around. You know, no one really expected them to make finals again on the back of last year. And, yeah, to finish second, a pretty clear second, and is really put in a game plan that's really changed our fortunes. And he's had to do it tough without Nat Anui for, you know, the last half of the season. Obviously, Gaff and our forward line hasn't really had much continuity. So, yeah, we've had to win in different ways almost some weeks. But, yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, we all know he's done a terrific job this season. And, yeah, I'll be honest, I did not have West Coast in the eight. So I'm completely wrong on that. So I'll suck it up and move on. Bernie Vince came out today, and clearly he's had enough of his injury run, and he's called time on his career, which is sad for one of the larrikins of the AFL, also one of the few players in the history of the AFL to play 100 games for both Melbourne and the Adelaide Crows, of course.
Yeah, and he was a terrific servant for both clubs, probably more so at Adelaide. He was the poster boy over here in SA. Yeah, probably tailed off a fair bit towards the end of the year, and as you touched on, maybe the injuries played a fair bit in that. So, yeah, he was probably always going to struggle to command back a spot next season, so it makes sense for him to bow out now.
Yeah, as always, we know it's a ruthless sport and you've only got a short amount of time in it. So a few delistings just to quickly run over. So Jimmy Tumpus at Port has had his, the former number 4 draft pick, has had his career terminated for the second time after moving from Melbourne to Port. Two sons of guns, Ben Jarman and Jackson Edwards, did not last the distance, so they've also been delisted. Some real hard luck stories. Nathan Freeman, after getting his shot finally this year, St Kilda have been ruthless, and they've cut him after 2 AFL games and I guess 3 years on the list. Hugh Goddard as well, injury plagued, much like Nathan Freeman, highly touted, also been cut by St Kilda. So they've gotten really, really ruthless. No mercy there at St Kilda anymore. And you'd hope to think that Freeman finds another club, former number 10 draft pick from Collingwood. Goddard as well. There is talk already that clubs are looking to sign Goddard, especially Carlton. So he could be picked up again. Billy Hartung, a bit unfortunate. It started off well with North Melbourne this season after being picked up from Hawthorn. Tailed off. Obviously tailed off too much because he's been cut by North Melbourne. And, of course, a guy that we loved at unfortunately, he's had a stop-start career. Michael Barlow from Gold Coast Suns has been cut by them. The writing was on the wall when they were travelling poorly and he wasn't being selected despite having 50-odd disposals pretty much every second week. The one-time Fremantle star. Yeah, I don't know that he finds another club, unfortunately, and that's the ruthless nature of this business.
Yeah, well, Barlow's always going to have a soft spot in every fantasy lover's heart,
yep.
Being that mature age star that he was. And, yeah, it's a weird one. If a player is getting as much of the ball as he does in the reserves, is obviously too good for reserves, surely there's an AFL club that can use him just to get his hands on the ball, just to be a big body for the young midfielders. It makes sense to me, but I'm not an AFL coach or a player manager, but he probably has some downfalls in his game which are keeping him from regular AFL action.
And his age probably comes into it now, being 32. So will clubs take the opportunity on a player that's had 2 knee recos and two, well, no, two broken legs, sorry. Mm. Will they take that chance on him at his age? And can, is he stopping a potential, I guess that's what Gold Coast looked at, is he stopping a potential draftee of 18, 19 from them getting regular game time? That's the issue. Yeah. So I guess we move on to the All-Australian team that got announced last night. And there's a few surprises, especially the captain of the All-Australian team. We'll get to that, but we'll run through the lines. It's a fairly solid side. Probably rewards a lot of players for their season. There's a few that are very stiff, which we'll run through. But your fullback line is Tom Stewart from Geelong in his second season, rewarded for a quality season back there. Alex Rance, not much more you need to say about him. And Rory Laird for the second season in a row being selected in the back line.
Yeah, that's a pretty decent fullback line there. Laird is the perennial ball magnet of the AFL in defence, that is. Rance does what he does. Tom Stewart would probably be pretty surprised, I'd say. That's a bit of a bolter, that one. But, yeah, he obviously had a great year and provided a bit more drive as well as being a really good nullifier. And halfback line was Shannon Hearn, Jeremy McGovern and Lockie Whitfield.
Yeah, look, Shannon Hearn, as being one of your boys, yeah, look, he had a superb season across that half-back line, marshalled the defence extremely well. Jeremy McGovern, the interceptor, last three seasons leads and intercept marks and created a new record this season. And then Lockie Whitfield, the surprise one, a midfield gun, but in a time of need for GWS, has shifted to halfback and he's been superb, providing plenty of run, quality disposal, and I guess a quality player that they needed given all their injuries.
Yeah, Hearn has really had a different season to every single previous season. He's got more of the ball, used that penetrating kick to more effect, and yeah, it's amazing how much a player can change his game almost completely in, you know, one season after he's probably had 10 years on the list, at least, I'd say. So, yeah, that's a credit to him and Simpson and the coaching staff.
Yeah, the centre line is very strong. You've got Andrew Gaff, rewarded for his season before his incident, but they've overlooked that, which is really good to see. Dustin Martin in the centre. Yeah, he's had a good season, not as good as last season, and still side bottom, rewarded for his stellar form with Collingwood.
Yeah, it's good to see Gaffey in there, and hopefully that's a sign that a lot of the AFL backlash towards his hit there on Brayshaw is turning, and you know, hopefully he's forgiven by the time he suits up next, wherever that may be. Dusty, yep, he didn't do it as well as he did last year, but he still did it very well. And side bottom, that's probably a little bit of a surprise as well. I think he was better last year, but again, Collingwood had a much better year, so that always helps. And he's always there if they're there or thereabouts when they're winning. And across the half forward line, Dangerfield, he had a bit of a shift to the forward half this year, so he's named on the flank. Lance Franklin at centre half forward with the captaincy, and Robbie Gray on the other flank.
Yeah, I'm confused about this line. Dangerfield, he had a fairly good season, but yeah, I don't know. There's options there, but Dangerfield got the nod, and he's vice captain. Franklin at centre half forward, yeah, name captain. Look, had another solid year. I still think there's another couple of guys that missed out that perhaps could have been ahead of him. And Robbie Gray also got the nod. Now, being a Port fan, you'd think that I'd be all for Robbie Gray being the Australian team, but I'm actually the opposite. I think he was good, but I don't think he was ultra consistent this season like he has been in previous seasons when he's been selected. And for mine, that's why he wouldn't have made it. But he's been selected for the fourth time, and there's not many Port players that can say they've been four-time All-Australians. So well done to Robbie Gray. We'll move to the full forward line, and it's pretty much got a very very finals feel about it. It's got you've got Luke Bruce, who's had a stellar season in one pocket. You've got the common medalist in Jack Riewoldt, and then you've also got Jack Gunston filling out the other pocket, which is probably a bit of a surprise. Jack Gunston, but I guess he does give that flexibility and does sort of play around the ground as well. So all three have had brilliant seasons, though, so no real complaints there.
No, it makes sense to have the Coleman leader in there for sure. Luke Bruce had a really, really strong season. He probably close to a personal best, I'd say. Yeah, so no real surprises there for me. Into the rucks, and this was always going to be a hot topic. Who was going to start out of Gawn and Grundy? They've got them both, but Gawn has been given first honours. Patrick Cripps, absolute midfield beast, does more than the lion's share in a team that just really offers no support to him at all. And then Tom Mitchell, the leading disposal winner.
Yeah, look, probably my only gripe with that is probably, personally, maybe Gawn might not have been first ruck for mine, but I'll move into that in a second. Cripps, look, he's playing in a shocking side. Let's not forget that, and literally gets a job done every week. Whether that brings the amount of attention that you'd normally expect from a player of his quality, maybe not, but you've still got to get it, and that's what he certainly does. And Tom Mitchell, clear outright Brownlow favourite, disposal king. He gets in there as well, which moves us to the interchange, and that's what I was saying. Brody Grundy on the interchange, probably for mine, just shades Max Gawn, but I can understand why they've gone Gawn. There's not really much between them, but just personally, I think Grundy's been slightly better. Clayton Oliver's probably a bit stiff to miss out on a midfield spot to Cripps or Mitchell. He's been absolutely fantastic. Shawnee Higgins, brilliant season by the North Melbourne Star, and finally rewarded for his season and his career, because he is a stellar player. And last on the list, bit of a surprise, bit of an interesting selection. Very good player, mind you, but Shane Edwards rewarded for, I guess, the last couple of seasons he's had with Richmond, and gets a final interchange spot.
Yeah, he's definitely the odd man out when it comes to names. There's, for me, there's probably about another 40 players that I would have ahead of him. Having said that, he does lead the league in a score assist, and he does that just about every year. So if you want a team that scores, you got to pick the most able to give it to the people that do. So, yeah, maybe that's their thinking behind it. Oliver has had a terrific year. He definitely is deserving of his spot. Could have almost started him on the ground. And as you said, Grundy is in that same sort of category. But, yeah. Overall, it's a decent side.
I guess when we're talking about these All-Australian sides, there's always the guys that are stiff. And just to name a few of them, you've got Tommy Hawkins, who had a brilliant second half of the season and probably could have edged Franklin. Finished on more goals than Franklin just. And, probably a bit stiff to miss. Ben Brown was leading the Coleman for three quarters of the season. He also misses out. And then you've got a guy like Dane Beams, who probably for the sheer quality of midfielders just misses out. He's been superb. Devin Smith is probably the one for mine, which is stiffest, given the fact that he led the league in tackles. He was brilliant for Essendon, not only when they were doing well, but when they were having a poor start of the season, he was their leading light. And for mine, he probably could have come in for Aubrey Gray on that half forward flank. Your man, Elliot, you miss us out somehow.
Yeah, I would just about, I know I do have a fair bit of bias and I watch a lot of West Coast, but I would just about swap Yo for anyone in that team.
Whoa.
Even, in any position.
Even Gaff.
Yeah, even Gaff.
Wow, okay, big call.
He had a terrific year. He was unreal. I mean, granted, he does have the tendency to dip in and out of games, but towards the back end of the year, he was as consistent as anyone, and he's a match winner.
Oh, look, you could argue he swaps with Edwards or even for mine, Dustin Martin. Big call that, but that's the way I view it. Jake Lloyd, look, probably for sheer weight of options across that half-back and back line, he just misses out. Mark Blissavs, he's the one that sort of surprises me. For mine, he was far better than Rance this season. His statistics show that as well, but I guess sometimes with these sides, you've got to show it for more than one season.
Yeah, that is usually the caper. It's more or less what you do in the second season after your breakout one. So, yeah, Blitzarves is a pretty good story, though. He was almost on the chopping block at certain stages at the end of last year, just really ineffective after they took him out due to that third man up rule. but he transformed himself and is an incredible athlete, and it's a credit to himself to be what a, you know, what a great season he had.
And happened out of sheer coincidence with the fact that both Lachie Henderson and Harry Taylor went down injured, that they were forced to put him in that spot, and he hasn't steered them wrong. Now they don't know what to do with Harry Taylor and Lachie Henderson. So, yeah, great season for him. Unlucky to miss out. Hopefully he backs it up and can get that All-Australian spot next season. So we'll finish off with some, I guess, some tragic and unfortunate news. Rory Sloane pulled out of the game on Saturday night. And unfortunately, the Sloane's son was born still, and they lost their son Leo. So our hearts go out to them, and also our thoughts and prayers go out to them as well while they try to overcome the tragedy that's beset them. So not much more than you can say on that. And the other, our other thoughts and wishes go out to Margaret Varco, who's in hospital after a head collision in the women's grand final between for Anglevale. She collided with an opponent and a teammate. Didn't go off, just sort of jogged off the ground, but collapsed in the rooms not long after, and she's in hospital. So our thoughts go up to Travis and the Varco family, and hopefully she can make a full recovery from it.
Yeah, and again, it just highlights the serious nature of head clashes. As you said, she walked off the ground, and when she got back to her rooms, that's when she had a collapse, and now she's in hospital, and it's not really sure which way she's going to go, which is just really sad. So, yeah, obviously, it's treated with great seriousness in the AFL, and so it should be.
Yeah, I guess that just highlights that there's... despite the fact that we're doing this show, that there's more to life than football. There is a lot of life outside of football.
That's right.
All right, so we'll end the show on that note. So enjoy the weekend off, and then let's get set for the finals.
Let's bring it on.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.